have people in their presence, because we're different creatures when we're on this electronic device, right? Like, we're not co-regulating together. We're not in the same room. We're not getting that relational zest of, like, being together and feeding off of each other. And that's also made telemental health pretty challenging for most mental health providers. Some of them are loving it, but many of us feel a huge loss of being able to just be in the room with our clients. And I don't think that we will be in a room with our clients for quite a while because of the risks of being in an enclosed space. But I do see us being in parks, you know, physical distancing and wearing masks and trying to continue to take care of each other and protect each other. But I think Oregon has done a good job, you know, of social physical distancing and doing our best to care for the greater community. And I hope that we can, I think, manage the second phase of the pandemic. I think it's definitely caused a little bit of anxiety in me the last week, and anxiety in my clients about what to do and when and how, and it's a, just a very confusing and difficult time, and there's not sort of one source of guidance. So a lot of this is up to small communities of people to figure out how they want to, you know, what risks they want to take and how they want to gather. But I think a lot of people are needing some outdoor time to nature. It's a huge loss right now to not be able to be in nature and to be with other people in nature. So we're going to need to figure it out.
Sounds like the music is coming up, and this is, we could just, as you said earlier, go on. And this is really wonderful.
Yes.
Been talking to you, Karen
thanks
Hickson. Thank you so much for coming
on.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for
all right,
me.
And you'll be live streaming tonight at 7. Go to rethinkingpsychiatry.org. We got to go. Thanks you very much.
Okay. Bye, Paul. Take care.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m. It's time for Inside Washington County.
More information on Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Our job in this show is to help the people who are willing to seek office to get their ideas, plans, and goals to you. Our plan had been to bring all candidates into our studio, and, in fact, all had agreed and were scheduled to do so. Then came the start of the coronavirus and the beginning of closures and social distancing. We had to come up with an alternative. So we invited each candidate to provide a written reply to specially prepared questions online. Each received the same set of questions for their office and had 48 hours to return their responses. Because we are an auditory podcast and radio show, we are broadcasting the candidate responses. In order to reflect the flavor of a debate as best we can, I will read each question and I will read each candidate's response. Inside Washington County endorses no one in any race. Any change in tone or inflection as I read any candidate's words are inadvertent and unintentional. Today, we have the race for Beaverton Mayor. The candidates are incumbent Mayor Denny Doyle seeking re-election, City Councilor Lacey Beatty, and also City Councilor Kate Arnold. We will identify them as they answer their questions using first names. We want to thank them all for adjusting with us to this unprecedented situation by providing their written responses, enabling us to bring their views to you. We also will give you a chance to place a virtual vote, so stay tuned after the last question for just how to do that. Moving now to our first question. Question 1. What problems do you see in how Beaverton City government currently operates? How can you, as mayor, help solve these problems? Lacey responds, there are two main areas I want to focus on for this question with the limited time we have. Let me start with something uncomfortable. Developers in our community have immense influence in City Hall. It's the main reason I didn't take developer money in this campaign. After 6 years of working in City Hall, we have had a mentality of allowing development at pretty much all costs. Developers and those with access influence how things inside the building operate far too often. Now that we've had a lot of development, it's been incredibly beneficial to our community. However, The majority of this development is impacting only a small group of people and not the community as a whole. We need a leader that can look past the developer money and who is not so easily influenced with creating the next thing, overlooking the majority of our community in the process. Secondly, I believe communication from City Hall is something less than desirable at this point. We have used our city social media in the last year largely to bring attention to the arts community. And while I'm a fan of the arts, and I think it's incredibly important for our community, we have wasted space to communicate to our community. I have received emails almost weekly from people's cars being towed or frustrated with transportation, not knowing who to contact about issues going on in their community. We really need a top-down approach on how we use the city's communication and social media to make sure that it is serving the majority of our community and not just a few. As mayor, I would broaden the scope of how we use our communication and outreach arm of the community to include information about what city councilors are doing, what our school boards are doing, or how everyday community members can access City Hall. Simply knowing where to park legally or what kind of development has happened in their neighborhood is important. Knowing who to communicate with is what the outreach arm of our city should be doing. Kate responds to the same question, what are the current problems, how can you solve these problems? Kate says, the biggest problem is that the mayor has the responsibility for two different positions. The officiating role of the mayor, plus the executive role responsible for controlling the operations of our $360 million budget and 600 employees. It's too much work and it's ineffective. This is hurting us, especially in the middle of the coronavirus crisis. Staff members are working hard to take care of their departments, but it seems like there is little cohesion and no overall plan. I'm not confident that we are coordinating well enough to get critical information out and to accomplish the most we can to protect and support our community. Hopefully, by January 2021, we will be past the pandemic and operating under a new charter. As mayor, I will work with the councilors to hire a professional city manager with a good track record and many years of experience in municipal government. This will add enormous efficiency to our organization, providing more services like roads, sidewalks, police, and water and sewer systems. It will also produce a stronger, more coordinated response in emergencies. Same question? Denny responds. Our current city government works well, and through our work, our partnerships, and relationships around the region and state, we accomplish a great deal for our residents. During my time as mayor, we have become a nimble and responsive city. Our staff and elected leadership work hard to look out for the needs of the people who live and work here. We garner awards from many different sources on many of the actions the city has taken, and have certifications for public works, the police department, and other departments like finance. As we respond to the impacts of COVID-19, we will be continually accessing what, if any, improvements can be made to the operations of our city government to react under challenging conditions. As mayor, myself and the city staff will continue to be responsive to our ever-changing world, and that will be true regardless of how our city government is structured. Moving to question two, in light of the coronavirus pandemic, what emergency policies can, should cities like Beaverton pursue to protect public health and lessen the impact of epidemics? Kate responds, we are fortunate to live with digital communications where we can instantly share large amounts of information and have virtual meetings without infecting each other. Thank goodness a fair number of people can work from home, but we need to help the many who can't. We still need our farms, factories, distribution systems, and other necessary services running in ways that protect workers and provide what we all need to live. Right now, the Senate just approved a $2 trillion bill expected to pass in the House today. Its effectiveness depends not just on the money, but on how quickly and successfully we figure out how to provide the goods and services needed to care for our sick and vulnerable and keep the rest of us safe, calm, and productive. I don't have a silver bullet to solve all this. What I do have is a mind and a heart and the leadership skills to solve what we can at our local level. I will work with the Chamber of Commerce and other community groups to identify essential activities and resources needed to keep our local businesses and economy alive. After this is over, we will look at lessons learned to update our emergency policies to be better prepared for the next one. If we are wise, we will look not just at pandemics, but at preparing for the big earthquake whose chances are almost 50-50 to happen in the next 50 years. Not preparing for that disaster will make this pandemic look like a walk in the park. Same question to Denny. Denny responds, with a lack of resources and reliable information from our federal government, it is the responsibility of states and local governments across the country to take action to protect our residents. I acted quickly at the city to declare a state of emergency, close public counters at the city, and make services available by phone or online, enact a halt on residential evictions for our large renter population whose household income may be impacted by the pandemic, and launch an emergency business assistance program, a grant-based program that will provide emergency relief assistance to sustain commercial, rental, and mortgage obligations. Local government leaders across the state and country are working together to share ideas and best practices, and Beaverton is and should be a leader for other cities when it comes to protecting our residents and lessening the economic impact of this epidemic. Lacey responds, the situation we find ourselves in is moving fast, as well as information shared with the public. So I'll date stamp the answer to this question as of my writing, which is March 22, 2020. Earlier this week, I emailed the mayor and my fellow council members explaining that we needed to create an eviction moratorium. I did this because the very first thing we should be doing is making sure people are able to remain in stable housing during a period when we tell people to stop working and stay at home. As you likely have read, this passed with the support of the majority of the council. In addition, if I were the mayor, I would be asking the staff to contact the many hotels in Beaverton requesting that they house families and students during such a time of need. Believe it or not, we have the highest rate of homeless teens in Oregon. I would also be asking them to house first responders and medical professionals that are currently being exposed on a daily basis so they don't have to go home to their families, potentially exposing them every night as well. If we had to, I would direct general fund money to support this expense. The city, as of this week, was still sending inspectors into the field to keep development moving. We should have halted this a week ago and created an order of merit for inspections and treated inspections similar to triage in field hospitals in the Army. If the inspection could impact human lives, such as safety issues like building integrity, those cases would continue. However, if it's to inspect a shower pan in a residential bathroom remodel, that should wait. These are the kinds of decisions mayors need to be leading on right now. Moving on to question three. Beaverton recently adopted a climate action plan that seeks to reduce fossil fuel consumption by 50% and make the city carbon neutral by 2030. As mayor, how will you ensure the city undertakes substantive action to meet its climate goals? Denny responds, plans are only as effective as their implementation. I am glad to have been part of our climate work with joining the climate mayors and reaffirming our commitment to climate protection in 2017 by becoming a signatory of the We Are Still In movement. The city of Beaverton began reducing greenhouse gas emissions in city operations in 2014 with the adoption of the Sustainable Beaverton Strategy. Now, the Beaverton Climate Action Plan offers us a bi-sector breakdown of our carbon footprint for locally generated emissions from the energy used in homes, transportation, waste disposal, water, and similar goods and services. The plan offers 86 concrete actions to achieve our climate goals, including the public agency responsible, the cost of the reductions, and the associated benefits. We will track our progress on goals, ensuring that we both mitigate our climate pollution and begin adaptation to a climate-warmed world. The mayor should play a key role in the city meeting these goals, and I will ensure actions are taken to do so. Also responding to question three, Kate says, our climate action plan identifies 86 actions, 65 of which have direct effects on lowering carbon emissions. The first thing I advocated for, and other councillors agreed with, is to form a climate action task force. The members will have relevant environmental background and will work with our sustainability staff to start the most effective reductions first. They will set the stage for a permanent climate action committee. As mayor, I will continue to focus on sustainability and resiliency. I will engage our neighboring governments, utilities, businesses, and nonprofits to encourage coordinated efforts leading to carbon neutrality by 2030. Carbon emissions in our city are 28% transportation, 30% buildings, and 42% from our household products. Important are policies that increase electric transit and vehicle use, buildings that are energy efficient and reach net zero carbon emissions, and a range of changes to reduce consumer waste, such as lowering food waste, increasing recycling and reuse, and finding replacements for materials with high environmental impact like plastics. This is a huge challenge with huge implications for our future. We must stay focused. Continuing with question three, moving to Lacey's response, Lacey says, "Let me start with that I am glad we passed the Climate Action Plan. However, it's my opinion that this plan is aspirational at best. It lacks enforcement in any real timeline and lacks goals to accomplish this by 2030. From the start, I've been asking our city council to create a climate action committee to address these shortcomings and oversee progress towards any goals. In our city, we create boards and commissions to oversee things that we value, and this should be at the top of the list. In creating this commission, I would look for 50% of the membership to be under the age of 25. I know a lot of other councillors only want people with technical experience. However, we should not limit people's participation on this board based on our perceived value of technical information. The people that this plan is created to protect are children like my 2-year-old daughter who don't have the ability to vote now, but decisions will impact her future for decades to come. Moreover, if we truly want to see this plan in action and ensure it doesn't sit on a shelf, we need an entity with the support of the council to take responsibility and put focused energy behind its implementation. When actions are somebody's third or fourth responsibility, failure happens, and we can't fail at this. From my time serving on the Beaverton Community Visioning Committee, I know that if we don't allow these goals into the city budget, they will never happen. City Council's main tool to administer at a top level is the budget. And if we don't direct financial resources from the budget to address this crisis, then we are simply saying we want it to happen and not creating the tools and resources to make it happen. We must put our money where our mouth is. Moving to question four, voters in Beaverton will be making a major determination on May 19th for the organizational future of Beaverton city government with proposed city charter changes. That, among other significant changes, will appoint a full-time city manager rather than the current system in which the mayor acts as chief administrator. Please tell our listeners where you stand on the proposal and why. Kate responds, "I've been advocating for this new charter since 2007. In our current strong mayor form of government, the mayor is able to operate with little oversight and relative impunity, makes way too much money, almost twice as much as the Oregon governor, and leaves our city susceptible to corruption and loss of critical services. This is why I have fought hard to establish a new charter for Beaverton, and I encourage our voters to vote yes on Measure 34-298, Beaverton Charter for 2021. This new charter will increase transparency within the city government. For example, even as a city councilor right now, I only get information from the staff when the mayor allows it. The ability to hide what's going on in our city has huge potential negative consequences. So does electing someone who is inexperienced at managing our 600 employees. Regardless of whether this measure passes or not, I will work tirelessly to create greater transparency and efficiency within our government. I also commit to drastically reducing my salary as mayor to one of service, donating the excess to our social service funding organizations." Lacey, responding to question four, says, "Even though I pushed successfully to include term limits, I was the only councillor to vote against bringing this so quickly to the voters in May, and I would like to share my reasoning. One, there was very little public involvement, and the community members that did give us feedback overwhelmingly asked for more time to understand the charter changes. Central to good leadership is transparency with justification, and this proposal lacks exactly that. Two, Community members wanted us to consider things like campaign finance reform and creating wards or city districts, while some council members were busy creating their unilateral utopian version of what our city constitution should look like. No constitution or charter should be written by six people. Businesses also didn't want us to consider it at this time, including the Chamber of Commerce. It's not often that all of those members join together uniformly on one topic. Updating how our government operates is a good thing, but this current process has lacked a central tenet, community input, from all perspectives. Same question to Denny. Denny responds, there are some pieces of the proposed change, like no longer using gender-exclusive references, that are important and overdue. Regarding the structural changes, I'm not sure I see where the absence of a city manager has impeded the work of the city. I am proud of the success we've been able to achieve in Beaverton over the past 10 years. We've built good partnerships with the council and the community to push forward initiatives like the Round and renovation of the downtown. Changing to a city manager comes with trade-offs, both in terms of political accountability and the operations of the city. Moving to question 5. What specific experience, skills, and talents do you offer that make you the best choice to lead Beaverton in 2021? Lacey responds, I believe there are 5 reasons why I'm the best choice to lead. In the Army, I learned how to stay focused on the greatest priorities and how to effectively triage staff support to achieve a goal. I believe that with the growth and the current and future challenges to come, we need a 360-degree leader. That's how I led in my role at Virginia Garcia. I manage people from clerks to MDs. I understand what it means to coach people at different levels and focus them on their part of a shared goal. In the nonprofit world, when money gets tight, we don't get to raise property taxes to bail the organization out. We have to dig deep and are required to make hard decisions. Bringing that kind of mindset and leadership into City Hall would be something new. During my time as a city councilor, I have been at the forefront of managing the city budget, advocating for needed infrastructure, and coordinating meetings and ordinances with other local elected officials from surrounding jurisdictions, not as the mayor or city manager, but as a city councilor. This regional leadership and working together with other cities will continue to be pivotal for future outcomes. Whether it's banning plastic bags, adopting changes in our metro transportation system, or combating the coronavirus, Beaverton needs a leader who can lead the city as well as being a representative for regional change. Coaching. I've been a lacrosse coach for 15 years. I've coached kindergarten to college, and I've learned a very valuable skill of getting people from one place to another. Coaching is making sure that we can bring out the very best in people and delivering if they think they can't. All mayors should have this skill. Lastly, not to be overlooked, is my professional MS in organizational leadership and management. Not only do I have vast experience from my military nonprofit leadership and elite level coaching, but I have the theoretical framework from graduate school to put everything together. I would love your vote. Question 5 at Kate. Kate responds, right now, leadership is everything. After 15 years on the City Council, this is the moment for me to lead our city as mayor. Given the tenuous and uncharted waters we are in right now, I am uniquely qualified with experience, vision, institutional memory, and an extensive budgetary and fiscal background. I have the ability to collaborate effectively, guided by a deep passion to serve. I am a practical problem solver with a heart for community. My early professional career included technical and financial work. I was a budget analyst for NASA and financial systems programmer. These analytical skills have served me well in my roles in city government. Same question to Denny. Denny responds, my experience for this position comes from my record of working with the community across my years of elected office and my on-the-job experience serving as the mayor of Beaverton. I bring additional experience from roles as a Beaverton City Councilor, a Tualatin Hills Parks and Recreation District Director, and with the League of Oregon Cities, National League of Cities, and the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Additionally, I represent the city on a variety of regional committees and task forces, working to improve the quality of life for residents of Beaverton and the Portland Metro when it comes to affordable housing, transportation, and economic development. I believe the skill set I bring to the office that sets me apart in this race has led to much of our progress in the city, is a leadership style of quiet but relentless collaboration, bringing people to the table, building consensus, and establishing a foundation so that even when we disagree, we're able to come back together to work on the next project. I have done this at the city level, at the county level, at the regional level, and the state and national levels. I believe that's part of why Beaverton has seen so much success over my time as mayor. I also believe that this is the approach we'll need for the future, as so many of the problems we're facing, homelessness, congestion, climate change, are much bigger than the city of Beaverton. These are regional, statewide, national, and in some cases, worldwide problems that require collaboration. This is the approach I'll continue to bring to the office to build on the progress we've made for Beaverton and its residents. Again, let me thank these candidates for their flexibility in helping us to adapt to the complicated coronavirus situation. Thanks to Shauna Muckle, our intern, for her research. We invite you now to go to our website and cast a virtual vote for your preferred candidate. Go to insidewashco.org/vote. And when it comes to the real election, please don't forget to get your ballot in before May 19th. As this is our last show of the season, just a few thoughts. Normally, we start in September and end in June. The coronavirus has forced us to end early, but we'll be replaying some of our best interviews throughout the summer, and we'll be back with new shows the week after Labor Day in September. Civic education and civic involvement are two of the most important and effective ways to ensure our good but imperfect system functions as well as possible. Democracy is a political system built on the participation of the people it's meant to serve. Lack of participation creates fertile ground for autocracy to develop either by design or by accident. If the many ignore or avoid the issues, the few will be in charge with little or no accountability. We, the people, are to hold our leaders accountable. To do that, we need to 1. Understand how government works and how to work with it. A civics education in schools would really help. 2. Make yourself aware of the issues. Follow real news. Listen to varied points of view. 3. Vote. 4. Seek elective office, or donate time or money to a campaign, or become an advocate for issues that are important to you. Before we get to vote, let alone working in the system or on campaigns, I'd like us to receive that basic education and the continued awareness of the issues if we are to cast our ballots wisely. That's why groups that promote civic engagement, like the Washington County Public Affairs Forum, or media programs like Inside Washington County, or other efforts to get people together on issues, it's so important. It gives you an opportunity to interact directly with elected officials, people serving in government, business, and the arts. You meet the leaders of your community. You get to ask questions. You get answers. Some groups, like the Portland City Club, issue policy statements and or endorsements. The Washington County Public Affairs Forum is neutral, and Inside Washington County supports that neutrality. Most people who are active in the democratic system will have strong opinions on issues, and people behind Inside Washington County, as well as the board of the Washington County Public Affairs Forum, they have their opinions, or they probably wouldn't be involved. However, the neutrality is important if we are appealing to all folks with different points of view. The forum offers programs of civic education from time to time. I would really like to see it mandated in schools across the country. I think that's where the foundation of civic education has to be. The forum and similar programs enable folks in our county to have access to our leaders and to impact our community. We cater to no political party or organization, None of the independent programs do. We serve the people of Washington County. I, for one, am proud to be part of such a system.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Personnel Committee meets on the second Monday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases stories and radio production.